Welcome to episode 61 of the Listening Brain Podcast. Welcome to the Listening Brain. I'm your host, Todd Houston. In this podcast, we explore childhood hearing loss through the lives of the parents and families who are on this journey and the professionals who serve them. It's my pleasure to welcome Aaron Thompson to the podcast. Aaron has been working with the Children's Cochlear Implant Center at University of North Carolina since July of 2004. She earned her bachelor's from Appalachian State University and her master's in speech and hearing sciences from UNC Chapel Hill. She completed her clinical fellowship year with Pediatric Speech and Language Services out of Greensboro and became a listening and spoken language specialist in 2009. Erin conducts listening and spoken language parent participation sessions, speech and language diagnostics for children who are deaf and hard of hearing, as well as co-treat sessions with families and audiologists. A passion has been mentoring students and professionals across North Carolina, the United States, and abroad. Erin has been a member of the Global Foundation for Children with Hearing Loss and has traveled to Vietnam on 3 occasions and Mongolia on 1 occasion to help provide mentoring and training abroad. She also spent time coaching a team of speech-language therapists in Auckland, New Zealand. Erin expanded her interests in 2019 to 2023 to include the role of family care coordinator for the Children's Cochlear Implant Center at UNC. She helped manage, facilitate, and coordinate cochlear implant consultation referrals, supporting all families going through the cochlear implant consult process at UNC Chapel Hill. It's really my pleasure to welcome Erin to the podcast. So Erin, welcome to the podcast. Would you introduce yourself and share more about your background?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Todd. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and chat. I'm Erin Thompson. I am a speech pathologist and listening and spoken language specialist with the Children's Cochlear Implant Center at UNC. I have been here. I am approaching the 20-year mark. I hit 20 years in July. So I've really done most of my career here. So I am able to kind of talk about the progression of the program here a lot. But my background. I am a North Carolina girl. I was born in Ohio, but raised in North Carolina. Did undergraduate work at Appalachian State, go Mountaineers. And then in my time at App in the communication sciences, the communication disorders program, of course, that undergrad in audiology and speech, I was extremely torn with the management of hearing. Class and really wasn't sure then if I wanted to be a speech pathologist or audiologist, and then learned that I could do speech with the hearing side of it. And that was kind of my focus right away. I was like, okay, I need a graduate program that allows me that opportunity. And so I was able to learn quickly that UNC had a program that would allow me to kind of focus on kids with hearing loss. And I met with Dr. Melody Harrison and was sold immediately and said, this is the spot for me. And then I met you quickly after and saw my very, very first patient with hearing loss. Actually, I was observing you. So.
Ah.
Way back
in the day. I was going to ask, when did you enroll for grad school?
Grad school was 01. I started in the fall of 01, and then 03. I graduated in 03.
So you were right in the middle of my time there. That fall, and I think that it was the spring of 2002 is when I left to go to AG Bell.
Okay. Yeah, because I was like, I knew, I couldn't remember what semester it was, but I know it was in there somewhere.
And yeah.
I actually saw that kiddo that I saw with you was here recently for a mapping appointment and is thriving as an adult, graduated college, thriving adult, living and doing great things. So really cool.
Wonderful. That's always good to hear. Everything worked out well. So
Yeah.
So you come to UNC working with Melody and other talented people. And did they have a specialization there? I know that was something they were talking about at the time.
Yeah, so there wasn't a specialization, if I'm saying this wrong, I apologize, Melody and Hannah and Lillian and everybody I worked with back then. Wasn't a specialization. Now there's like a hearing loss grant. I don't know the official name of it, so I apologize for that too, or there was at times. But there wasn't anything specialized at the time I was there, but there was the cochlear implant team. And at that time they were still the preschool that Angie Creech was teaching and Hannah was working. Lillian wasn't there at that point, but Hannah was the speech pathologist pulling kids out. And I was able to spend my first semester observing the classroom. And then seeing a couple of kids with Melody at the time, and then an oral rehab class that I was able to take. But that was the specialty almost was that there was actually an opportunity to work with kids with hearing loss as part of the actually in-house program at the time. So,
yeah, I think that's actually uncommon, you know, as you probably well know. And unless a faculty member really has, you know, hearing loss in children as a real focus, you know, grad students may not get exposure to any child with hearing loss. I mean, they could get all their child speech and language hours with other populations.
And we just actually have a new UNC graduate student that just started with us this week. And we've been talking just kind of about the changes and the new stuff and how it was set up when I was there and how she's so excited because she has such an interest in this population and that she has done all of her other, this is her final semester, and she's so excited to have the opportunity to really work with this population fully this semester to really see if it's what she wants to pursue after. And that's what we need. We need that for some of these graduate students that have the interest, but not the opportunity.
So. Yeah, exactly. It's what I've seen all, you know, throughout my career is that. And at the time, I think Melody might have been between grants in terms of, because I know that she's gotten several grants over the years when she was there with, you know, personnel prep grants is what we had at South Carolina that Lillian took advantage of. I don't think Hannah, I'm trying to remember. Because she and I only overlapped like a year when she was there. But yeah, so it's a really small world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I knew once I was able to observe the preschool my first semester and then knew, I was like, oh, I love this. So then I really almost begged and pleaded to have a second placement with, at the time, the preschool called Castle, Center for the Acquisition of Spoken Language Through Listening Enrichment. I really was like, please, please, please let me have a full placement there. Cause it was just kind of a couple hours in a week because I'm really, really interested. And then I was lucky enough to have that as my full placement, my final semester in the spring of 2003. And I was just, and it was in this very building still, we're still here. Yeah, still here. And I knew that it was what I wanted to do. In the population that I wanted to work with.
So this is maybe an odd question, but when you think back, when you think about what you're doing now to what you were doing after grad school, working there, how has your approach changed in doing listening and spoken language?
That's a great question. Probably in a lot of ways, and then some of the things, not at all. I was just talking to a new family about sound awareness and learning to listen sounds and reading and songs and motions. But I think my approach, the thing that's probably changed the most is my approach with training families. Probably the whole evocative coaching, strengths-based coaching, finding out family strengths and then helping guide and support them on how to carry over these goals at home. A lot, I think a lot of that has changed. I also am 20 years older, so I am I am not seen as the, you know, the young woman out of school, and now have some more experience under my belt. So a lot of parents are now younger than me, which wasn't the case before. So I think that just kind of that relationship building with families, I feel like I've always been able to build relationships with families. I felt like that's one of my strengths, and just, you know, building that rapport. But I do feel like it is different now in my approach to developing those relationships. And I think a lot of that is in regards to my constant continued training in evocative coaching, strengths-based coaching, and just how to support families on their needs versus what I think their needs are. Or sure. What I think child's needs are. So I think that's a big one probably for me.
And so for listeners who may not know the difference between a strengths-based approach versus evocative coaching, how would you define that?
Oof. How would I define that? Oh, no. Lillian's going to get me for not being able to maybe define the difference.
She won't listen.
I think if I look, just think more about the strengths-based is learning and truly listening to a family's needs, their concerns, what's the most important to them, and finding out what they feel comfortable with and what is important to them and helping focus and develop that. Or what things that is a strength for them and helping continue that and make that flourish even further, and how to use that in other situations to help meet the needs of the child's speech, language, listening, and what the parent's goals are for them in those areas.
Right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
You just passed your oral comms. How's that?
Oh, good. Okay, thank you. Okay, go sip of water now.
Sure. No, I've always liked the strengths-based approach and doing that with parents. It kind of reminds me of some research that was done in appreciative inquiry of really, you know, it's an appreciative inquiry has been applied to lots of different fields. But it's essentially the same thing in this situation of strengths-based, is looking at what's working really, really well and build on that and then multiply that and encourage, and using motivational interviewing, you know, and open-ended questions and all that stuff. And again, I think that going back to what we were talking about earlier, I think there's a lot of situations, a lot of graduate programs are just not touching on any of that stuff. Because they're not really focused on early intervention. They're not really training students really well. Or maybe they get some training, but it's not the depth of training that they can leave graduate school and really understand how to put all that together.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I, that kind of goes back to your initial question of what's different. I think I went in with an I hate the word, has a negative connotation, but an agenda.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's what we're going to do today. Here's what I think we need to do.
Right.
We're going to do it. And now I go in with ideas of things that would come next in the hierarchy of listening development or speech development or vocabulary, et cetera. But I go in and I find out where the parents are. Where are they today? And what do they need? What have they, where are we? And then we take that idea or those needs, and then we meet and we figure out together where we're going to end up. So I'm probably a little less structured. Not structured. There's still a structure. There's still goals. There's still hierarchies, but less my structure, what I think potentially to where we are now.
Right. And I think that's the safest way to approach it. And I think what you've just explained is exactly, I think, where I've evolved to and trying to show my grad students now of, yeah, you can have an idea of where you want to go, but this plan you have, and I want them to plan and be prepared, but at the same time, we may have to switch gears. You know, we may have to go in a different direction because of the mm-hmm. child or the parent, whatever's going on that day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's, you know, obviously for students that don't have a lot of experience, that's a big challenge, you know, because they had this plan and they have to follow the plan. And that's mm-hmm. what they've, you know, they spent 3 hours putting this activity together, you know, and laminating it and cutting things out, all this stuff. Yeah. And then it's like, it lasts 10 seconds or, you know, a couple of minutes, and then the child is, you know, ready to move on.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do I do now? You know?
Yeah. Well, and of course that goes to being as comfortable as possible with the material and knowing how to adapt and move and adjust. And
exactly.
You have to have that experience or level of knowledge or, you know, comfort with it to be able to see what happens and see where we need to go.
That's
absolutely.
Right. That's right. My often, they probably get tired of me telling them this every semester, but I said, if, you know, it doesn't matter the activity per se, if you know what the child is working on or what the goals are. Mm-hmm. And I think somewhere along the way, they thought, oh, let's come up with some great activities and then figure out how we're going to use it with the child. And it needs to be reversed. Know where the child is functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, anything, you can use just about anything for that, you know, to meet those goals. Even was it Helen Beebe, you talked about the lifesavers. I usually give the students a pack of lifesavers at the end of the semester. And they're like, why are you giving me these lifesavers? I said, well, you know, one of our really great grandmothers of auditory verbal said, you should be able to do a full session with a pack of lifesavers if you're a really good clinician. And I kind of reinforced, know where the child is and you can use anything to uh-huh. you know, help them move forward.
I had forgotten about that. I might do that next week. Who can I with? I have a grad student with me 2 days next week. I might pull out some lifesavers and see if I can do it.
Well, I have discovered.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, there you go. I've discovered that you can't always find lifesavers like we used to.
Oh.
It used to be like the thing to go get at the drugstore or the grocery store.
Yeah.
Not as common as they used to be.
Uh-huh.
Now they're like gummy lifesavers, and
oh,
you still
right.
can find hard candy every now and again. So you have to kind of look for it sometimes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we talked about you and how things have evolved. Let's talk about the program there, because I truly think that UNC Chapel Hill and the program you guys have there is definitely one of the best in the country. And why do you think it's been so great? and it is, it does have a very positive reputation, not only for surgery, but especially the therapy, the intervention after the surgery, especially with cochlear implanted kids, but any kid. Any child with hearing loss. So what do you think the key components have been over the years that you think this is why things seem to be going well?
Well, number one, thank you for that compliment. That's very kind. I think it's a wonderful program as well. I have been here for a long time now to see the progression. And it was great when I started, but we are constantly progressing and changing. And I think we are trying and still remain as a really dedicated team. And not to say that other teams aren't dedicated, but we are a very dedicated team. Some of the key things that I would say is that we are constantly trying to keep an open mind of what we need to do differently, or what's next, or what does research say, or what do we need to learn about to continue to adapt and meet the needs of the families and the kids that we see. We have been very fortunate over the years to, at times, not that we don't worry about revenue, but it hasn't had to be the very first thing that drives decision making, for, you know, a million different reasons. I think that we have had leadership. I mean, when Carolyn Brown created this program in order to be a training program, because she knew that there weren't enough professionals in North Carolina to serve and provide services for the children with hearing loss in North Carolina. The very program was developed to meet a need, and knew that it needed to be dedicated, and it needed that folks needed training, and that training takes time, and you need professionals to have the opportunity to learn. And I was able to meet all the requirements for my LISL certification. I had my supervisor here. Hannah was my main go-to. I had a partner to do it with. Sandra and I went through the process together, and we had the opportunity to continue to learn and train and develop. So I think that is huge. We are constantly trying to be at different conferences, constantly trying to learn how to best serve the kids and families that we see. It has never been the approach of, oh, I don't have time to learn that new thing, or let me just see these children. Again, not saying that other people are, I'm just saying that we aren't. Right. It's just always like, help me know how to do this even better. It is such an integrated team. I am constantly talking to the audiologist. I am able to message surgeons. They are under the same roof, but if we have questions, we are constantly collaborating, again, to best to learn and to gather research and to then help make further, you know, recommendations or to best serve children. So it's constant research, constant collaboration, constant learning, then constant teaching. If we know something or learn something, we are trying to share that information as fast as possible with as many people as possible to help children that are not right here with us.
I think as I, you know, hear you discuss everything that in terms of the commitment that's there for this continuous improvement. And I think you guys have been sort of the epitome of that growth mindset, that you're constantly wanting to stay current, look at research, like you're saying, collaborate together, really being a team of people that have to work together to really meet the needs of the families and the children. And that really is that, you know, sort of growth mindset versus, I think we've all had individuals or programs or schools or whatever who have a different attitude. Like, oh, we already figured it out. Just do what we do.
Yeah, I'm good. Good over here.
Yeah. And so those situations are usually not the best, obviously. And so that's really what I've admired about you guys. You know, when I think about cutting edge and what's sort of on the horizon, it's pay attention to what you guys are doing. And so I've benefited from your guys, you know, just watching what you're doing and staying in contact with you and all those things and learning, which I think is just a phenomenal place to be in a program serving these families.
thinking about some of the different things over the years, you know, and we've had great leadership that have had great brainstorming ideas that have then developed grants to allow us to try out different things. We started doing teletherapy in 2015 based on a grant, and we really didn't have a clue what we were doing, but we knew some concepts and tried to figure out how to do that. And then SSD and ABIs, and now we have a mobile unit that's coming soon, and we're going to try, you know, so it's, we've also had great leadership that's had these ideas that have then allowed us to do research, gather data, to then keep progressing.
Yeah. And I think everyone has to have that buy-in and that's mindset and the leadership to encourage it to happen and to sort of make room for it to happen. And let people have time in their schedules, for example, to get together and discuss and support people getting continuing education and going to conferences and presenting and learning. So if you don't have that sort of mindset, then it can be kind of suffocating, which I've also experienced in other situations. So it's always great to see what you guys are doing. So you guys have been doing telepractice. So I know you for quite a while now. And when I had Lillian on, she mentioned the mobile unit. How is it coming together?
Coming. That bus is coming.
The bus is coming.
We're getting there. It is, we have kind of a soft launch day coming up in the spring. We are now at a point where we are finalizing some different locations. And I say we, I have not been in the specifics of that. But there are locations that people have gone to visit. We are collaborating with people at certain locations across North Carolina. We are starting to order some supplies for the mobile unit. We have schedules blocked. We are figuring out a lot of the logistics where the bus is going to park, even, you know, down to these things. So it is, we are getting much, much closer. We are identifying patients in different areas to create lists. We are collaborating with Peds Audiology for sleep ABRs on the mobile unit. So we are getting closer by the day. We talk about it every single day in some capacity.
Right. It's like everything that's old is new again.
Yeah.
Because back in the old days, you know, there was the van that would go out and whether it was testing hearing and kindergartners or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Many years ago. So I know in South Carolina that was happening to a degree with similar situations of very, very rural areas that didn't have access to a lot of services. So we had a little mobile unit in place, and then it kind of went away. But I think you guys are seeing the need for it now. And so it kind of goes back to the telepractice thing, is that even with telepractice, thinking, oh, we can use this to get to rural areas, people are still not accessing services because they may not have access to the internet, or it's, you know, really spotty and not, you know, and so, and other factors that prevent them from getting access to services, and they just need someone to come to them. And I think what you guys, again, you're doing some cutting edge things and making sure that no child in North Carolina is going to be without services.
There are so many children that of course, all the research behind finding, gathering the data to locate areas of the most need, and of course then coordinating with where we can actually physically get to and from in a day. The children and the families are out there. And so it's, how can we even better support the families that need it for whatever the reason may be?
Right.
Well,
I'm excited to hear how things go, you know, a year
Me
later.
Too. I'll be on the bus on Tuesday, so I'll be able to report back
Wonderful. So yeah, so you'll have to come back and tell me how things are going.
Absolutely.
So I know you're busy and I don't want to keep you for too long, but I wanted to ask you one more question. So
yeah,
what advice would you give a new graduate in either deaf ed or audiology or speech language pathology who wanted to do this work? What would you advise them to do at this point?
Go for it.
Go for it.
There's a need. There is such a need that ask, you know, if you're looking for, if it's not a specific with a cochlear implant team, but if it's with a school system, if it's with a private practice, if it's with, you know, another type of organization that I can't, not thinking of it this very second.
Sure.
Ask about the opportunity to work with kids with hearing loss, and then ask for the support to either get access to coaching, time for coaching, or support to get to conferences, attend lectures, you know, Zoom meetings, things like that, to create that community of support to be able to access the information, because the need is out there for more professionals. And if you have, again, the leadership is recognizing that you're interested, which is huge, that they need the support, that professional is going to need the support, and the community is out there. There are so many conferences and networking abilities to learn that I would say, go for it, but ask the questions to get some support, because we all need it. We still need it. I still need it. I need my colleagues. I need the professionals around the country and the world at this point that I know to continue to grow and learn and advance and change and adapt. And as long as you have the motivation and then the opportunity and the support from leadership to do that, I say, go for it.
Wonderful. Well, Erin, it's been wonderful catching up. Can people maybe reach out to you? Maybe go to the UNC website?
Yes.
How would you?
Yeah. So if you start, oh gosh, I should know the website. It was MedUNC something. I think if you search the Children's Cochlear Implant Center at UNC, our page will come up and there is contact information there. And please, anybody can reach out. My email is there. It is erin.thompson@unchealth.unc.edu. But it should be, if you search the Children's Cochlear Implant Center, all of our contact information is also there. So happy to talk to as many people as I can.
Be careful what you wish for.
I know. I say that. As many people as I'm able to actually get to, you know.
Yes, I understand.
I will respond. I will.
Well, thank you again, and good luck with everything. And we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Todd.
Erin was such a joy to speak with, and I enjoyed learning more about her. Even though our paths have crossed many times, obviously, in the field, and I've always admired the work that she has done and the work that is happening at UNC Chapel Hill and the Cochlear Implant Center. I think it's just one of the best cochlear implant programs, and of course, family services as well, with listening and spoken language services. I think it's just one of the best places in the country to get those services. So I highly recommend everything they're doing there. And I, again, really appreciate Erin joining me on the podcast. And I look forward to continuing to admire what she's doing and see what else she ends up doing in terms of her consulting and mentoring and teaching, not only in the United States, but abroad as well. And thank you guys for listening to this episode. Please, if you don't mind, leave us a great 5-star review and refer the podcast to someone else or several people that you think might enjoy listening and learning more about Aaron and other professionals who are serving children and their families with hearing loss, and especially those who are learning to listen and talk. We want to educate and provide as much information about this approach as we possibly can. So with that, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another exciting episode. Until then, be safe and be kind. This has been a production of the 3C Digital Media Network.